Patrick Mahomes yesterday. Was that his best performance ever?
Yes, it was. How about that dynamite drop?
So good.
There's nobody better.
I got told by legal.
I mean, I just, unbelievable. He just deadpanned that thing right there. Like, he had that ready to go.
Oh, I mean, he's, hey, remember that time, Vern, you dropped a hot dog in your lap? It looked like you dropped your penis. That was funny. That was in the Royals press box. That was funny, Vern.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. Well, hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday.
Oh, the memories I have of Vern and Bink at the Royals press box is awesome. All right, do you want to take a guess on percentage, yes or no?
No, I don't, because I just saw it.
Okay.
So.
Our Fesco and Dusty Wednesday poll goes back to what we talked about yesterday with baseball being a minute, very minute percentage of your fan base is gambling for baseball games. So we ask, is sports gambling a part of your regular football fan experience? And 60% of 80 people that have voted said no.
That's crazy. Yeah, I thought it'd be the other way around.
What was it? How many?
60% said no. So okay. Far, we're very early into this thing.
We'll do this every hour at the top of the hour.
I'm genuinely interested to see, because yesterday, as we talked about, 93.5% of baseball fans say gambling is not part of their baseball watching experience. And the Athletic surveyed like 14,200 fans. So that's a big number that they surveyed. 93.5% of baseball fans that they surveyed said baseball or gambling on baseball is not part of their baseball watching routine. So football, I would assume, would be much higher than that. But so far, I'm a little surprised, I'll be honest with you.
And we have the response on this. We have one from Chiefs Thumbs Up. And I agree 100% with what they say. They said 100%, especially for those terrible Thursday night football games, it makes those games a little bit more enjoyable. And I think that, in a nutshell, is why I we'll throw skin on games when it comes to like a Thursday or a, you know, the first slate of Sunday games where I'm like, man, it's kind of weak. You know, there was a Wednesday game, there was a Thursday game, there's a Friday game. All right, there's four or five games in the noon slate, and it's Arizona and Detroit.
Yeah, what are we going to get for that noon slate on the first weekend of the season,
stinky,
right? Because as Dusty just said, we have a Wednesday game, we've got a Thursday game, we got a Friday game. Nothing on Saturday, and then we've got Sunday. And then, of course, you got your Sunday night. You probably got to – no, I don't think you get double Monday nights anymore.
Just week two.
Yeah. Just week two as
they
a double
do,
Monday
they do
night?
In week two.
Well, no,
Monday.
I think ESPN got rid of those games when they took over NFL Network. They had to seed something back, and I think those extra games, because that's why we're talking about that five-game package that is available right now that YouTube may bid on. I think ESPN had to give five games back to the league when they took over the NFL Network. So there's a five-game package that ESPN used to have that is going to be – farmed off, if you will, for more money. And I think YouTube is the leading buyer of that right now. So, you know, you could potentially have what? The Sunday night game, the Monday night game. So that's four teams right there. Three games, that's another 12 teams plus four. So that's half your slate that's playing in prime time on opening weekend. And so that noon slate on, you know, week one, four games there, and then what, four games in the 3 o'clock slate then? I mean, that's crazy, man.
They usually do like six games in the noon, then two in the three. You're like, okay, great. Well, one of these better be good.
You know, you're really, you know, limiting to your Sunday afternoon partners the games and the amount of games that they can have when you start farming off these other games. Eventually, those other networks may say, hey, we want ours, but I read something yesterday where Fox has said, we're going to pay whatever it takes to stay in business with the NFL and these other sports leagues. Sorry, you're not getting your money, which is kind of scary for Major League Baseball right now, as they're running around trying to figure out what to do with their rights deals. These people in television right now are saving a war chest to make sure that they are still in business with the NFL, and they really don't care about these other sports right now.
Speaking of a sport that we care about, which is baseball, which is getting ready to start, and we are all worried as we all look into the 27 season if there will be a lockout or there'll be a work stoppage. Here's some interesting audio to think about.
Part of his job is to demonstrate to them that he tried. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if at some point the owners back off of a cap. I don't know when that would be. You know, is that March? Is that January? Is that after you started to miss some games in April and then everybody says, okay, all right, that's enough. Let's try to find a way to play. But before you get to that point, don't you have to demonstrate to them, well, hey, look, guys, I tried. I tried to give you this thing that you told me I needed to go out and do. And the other interesting wild card here is Rob himself. Manfred has said he intends to retire in January 2029. That's when his contract is up. We could take him on his word at that is his plan. But there's also a world in which, you know, he's not going to get whatever he's making now in another job. You know, let's say it's $25, $30 million a year in total compensation, something like that. So maybe he wants to come back. Well, if he wants to come back, what do you have to do to come back? Do you have to deliver the cap to the owners to make them say, hey, we love having you here. Please stick around. And so the question of what does Rob Manfred himself want is a hard one to answer right now. And he says throughout his career, he's focused most on having games played.
Okay, well, ball's in your court, Manfred.
Yeah, that's Evan Drellich of The Athletic with our sister station up in Chicago. And he was talking about, you know, the salary cap. And they said, you know, Rob Manfred will try to get the salary cap done so he can tell his owners he tried. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And I'm good with that. I've said now for the last couple of months and maybe about a year, I think the salary cap is a scam. And it's just one of those things that's low-hanging fruit that fans glam onto. It's more of a buzzword, in my opinion, in baseball, and it doesn't fix the root of the problem. The problem isn't the teams that are spending too much. It's the 18 teams, including the Royals, that aren't spending enough. And we talked about this last week with the central fund of Major League Baseball between $200 and $210 million that every single Major League Baseball team gets. Each team, just for being a member of Major League Baseball, gets between $200 and $210 million every year from the central fund. Now, that should be the minimum number that every team has to spend on their payroll every single year. It's pretty simple. You're getting free money from Major League Baseball. That needs to be put back into your payroll, which is essentially, Dusty, what the NFL salary cap is, right? Whatever that salary cap number is roughly right around the amount of money that every NFL team gets from the national TV deal. That's how they kind of come up with that salary cap number. And so basically what they're telling the league is, you're getting all this free money from TV. You go spend it on your players and worry about everything else. In Major League Baseball, there's only 12 teams spending more than the central fund has doled out. That's the bigger problem right now for me. It's the skinflint owners in baseball. It's not the salary cap in baseball. And I think more and more people are starting to kind of come around to say, maybe the salary cap isn't the right thing. Didn't you say Colin was even talking about it yesterday?
Oh, yeah. He was blaming the teams on the floor, not the teams at the top.
Exactly. He's 100% right about that.
His take was essentially the Dodgers are helping baseball, whereas teams like the Pirates, the Marlins, and he said the Cardinals are hurting baseball.
That's true, the Cardinals.
He's like, if they're not hurting baseball, look what they're doing with their food. They're paying you to come eat at the stadium. We'll see what happens, because hopefully the owners start to crack and we don't have to miss out on any baseball, especially where this Royals team could be headed in the future. Coming up next, where is this guy headed in the future? Back home, or is he staying home? We'll talk next. Plus, Mac Morey with one word on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty, brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. Your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
On the TV screen right now, it says, Lewis Riddick, Kenny Walker III's best fit is with the Commanders.
Good. The Commanders a good fit for anybody? Again, that's just a team that just does nothing for me. Their name sucks. I'm not a fan of Burgundy.
Ron?
Yeah, I like him.
I love their colors. Love the Burgundy.
You do? See, I've never been a Burgundy guy. I don't know.
I like their color mashup. It's nice. I mean, I know Commanders fans that are still calling them the Redskins.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
In fact, when my buddy Oxley, he takes his kids to Chiefs games every year, and when they play the Washington Commanders, they do not get to wear Chiefs shirts. They have to wear what Dad likes.
Is he a Commanders fan, or Redskin fan, or Washington football team fan?
Yeah, was a military brat.
Oh,
so
cool.
Dad moved around, and then when his dad was stationed or wherever in like Washington, he just was like, boom.
Yeah, probably early 90s.
He's older than I am. He's like mid-40s.
Okay, so he's closer to my dad. They were good. Yeah, I mean, they were the hogs back then on that offensive line. Doug Williams, a quarterback. They were going to Super Bowls. Like, that was a legitimate team. I mean,
what was that tight end's name? Big white dude they had back in the early mid 90s. For some reason, I got his card and gave it to him because it was like a refractor.
I'd have to think about that. But like Art Monk was their wide receiver. That's all the famous.
Art Monk.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. I mean, Art Monk was unbelievable. And Jay Schrader was a decent enough quarterback. That is right in the era. Like Theismann breaks the leg in 85. Mm-hmm. I think 85, 84, and then Jay Schrader takes over. They lose to the Giants in the NFC Championship game, make the Super Bowl the following year. They make the Super Bowl in 91. I mean, like, those Joe Gibbs teams were really good. They were fun to watch, man, and absolutely you would become a fan. You would be hooked on that if you were a kid and you're in a town and the team's winning, sure.
Yeah, his daughter, hilarious, right? She's a good athlete. And so we had a get-together on Friday, and our first question was like, have you ever gone to a Chiefs game? She's like, yeah. My dad and me wear Commander stuff, though. And I was like, do you have a basketball game this week? She's like, yeah. I was like, if you score 10 points, I'll give you 10 bucks. Dude, didn't go to the game. I just said, report back on the game. And she goes, or my buddy comes over and he's like, dude, you probably shouldn't bet with kids. And I was like, why? And he was like, after every basket, she goes, that's 4 points. And then she'd go down court, score, that's six.
Oh, yeah, keep on track, right?
And like, if you get free throws, that's a point as well. End up having like 50 points.
There you go. Good job.
So that's 10 awesome. Bucks to her. So
it's a big win for her.
So, heck yeah.
I thought you were going to say you could wear Chiefs gear to the game instead of the Commanders gear.
No.
Let's call it what it is. Washington football team is a better name than the Commanders, too. It is a much better name.
Team. Yeah.
I did, too.
WFT?
Why not? I mean, why not just keep that name? Because the Commanders is cheap. It really is a cheap nickname. It sucks. They got to change it. Yeah, it will be. They'll probably go back to the Redskins. It seems like that's where it's trending right now in Washington. If they change the name from Commanders to anything but Redskins, there will be all kinds of people losing their minds in Washington, D.C.
So yesterday, the local Chiefs Twitter was in a frenzy, correct? We all saw this yesterday, breaking down about, 1:30, 2 o'clock? So Nate Atkins on Twitter or X, he is a senior writer covering the Los Angeles Rams for The Athletic. Les Snead sounds like a GM ready to be aggressive to maximize Matthew Stafford's window of one more year, we think. Opening to trading a first-rounder for a proven player. Secondary is a big focus. Is there an all-pro that you could add? Trade talks are intense this time of year, and they're having them. What does that say to you guys? Because to me, there was also audio that gets attached to this yesterday from Trent McDuffie.
If I could play for another team, I'd probably want to play close to my family. So that'd probably be the LA Rams so that my family can come see every single game.
Yeah, that was from last year where he was talking to some kids.
That's how stuff happens.
I know. It's crazy. It's unbelievable. Yeah, he said he wanted to be a Ram. And people are like, he just said this. No, he didn't say this today. That was a week ago. A year ago. He's asked a simple question. And I think we'd all probably say, what team would you like to play for? I'd like to play, for the Giants. I would. I wouldn't mind playing for them, Mac. You play for the Rams. And now it's out there. Oh, my God, this guy wants to be a Ram, right? But yeah, everybody wants to play in front of their home family and friends and situations like that. So
because then also the Rams' new defensive backs coach, by the way, recruited / coach Trent McDuffie at Washington.
Well, there you go.
I mean, coincidence? I think not.
Yeah, exactly. I think I think there's a really good opportunity. I've been saying this since January. That they're going to go and trade Trent McDuffie, it looks like, this offseason. That's a big trade chip for them to go out there. But, I ask you this. If they do go and trade him to the Rams, is 29 good enough to get back in return for Trent McDuffie? Or do you need their number 13 pick to come back in return for Trent McDuffie? Because, 29 is nice, but it's a lot different than picking at number 13 when you have, maybe 15 true number one draft picks. Or do you trade Trent McDuffie to the Rams and take their first-round draft pick next year instead of taking their first-round draft pick this year based on what the draft is going to be like next year versus what the draft is this year?
Yeah, I don't know. If they're going to give me just 29 alone by itself in this draft is not enough.
It's not enough. No.
Is that where you lean towards? It's basically a second-round pick?
Yeah,
I think it's closer to a top third round pick than it is a second round pick at this point in time.
It's definitely not a first round pick. Yeah. And you talk about next year. I mean, 13 and another pick this year or a later round pick next year would be more what I'd go, or 29. But you talk about their first round pick next year, like They're trying to win the Super Bowl. Right. And I think if Matthew Stafford's healthy, they're going to have a good chance to do it. They're not going to be lower than 28.
That's what I'm saying. Like, how much does it differentiate from this year to next year? But does the, the depth of the draft help next year?
And there's also an opportunity. I mean, you didn't think this time last year the Chiefs would be 6-11 and pick a number 9
for sure,
either, right?
Things can change.
Things change and, you know, stuff happens.
Because what I saw yesterday was interesting, and I want to bring up to you guys, was what if you gave them McDuffie and they gave you pick 29 and Blake Corum?
Yeah, that's good. Absolutely.
Because then you just go get one free agent running back. You get your Blake Corum guy. And then
how old is he?
Like 24.
This will be his third year in the league.
So like 25, 26. And he did a hell of a job backing up, what's his name?
Kyron Williams.
Kyron Williams.
Yeah.
And that's their guy.
Yep. Blake Corum's really good. He can do everything too.
Then that goes to Binkley's point about, you know, having to do an Orlando Brown type of trade. Is that enough for Trent McDuffie? I mean, I texted somebody that's close with Trent yesterday, a friend of mine, and we were kind of talking about it. I go, what do you know? He's like, I said, it was like, really
nothing yet.
Nothing yet. Exactly,
talk to you in a week.
Yeah, talk to you later.
Yeah, talk to you on Thursday.
But I said to him, I said, if Trent McDuffie doesn't play another snap with the Chiefs, right? Mm-hmm. And this could be hyperbole, but he may have the best resume in the history of Kansas City Chiefs when you think about it. 4 years.
Over Mahomes?
Yeah. 4 years, three Super Bowls, two Super Bowl championships, first team All-Pro, second team All-Pro, countless Pro Bowls. I mean, you could not have scripted a better four-year career for anybody like we saw with Trent McDuffie. Not only did the team have success, but individually he had success, became one of the best, if not the best corner on this team and maybe in the NFL. Three Super Bowl appearances in 4 years, two wins, all pros. Like, what more can this guy do? You'd be selling Trent McDuffie high. Like, this is the perfect time to sell on Trent McDuffie because you've already won, right? That pick has already been a home run for the Kansas City Chiefs. And now if you can turn it into maybe a starting running back and another first round draft pick, you've just taken that first round pick from 4 years ago, got the most you could possibly get out of it, and then maximized it on the back end. I mean, that's a hell of a resume for Trent McDuffie here in Kansas City. You'd be hard pressed to find somebody who accomplished so much in such a short period of time. It really is a remarkable resume.
Yeah. For the short period of time, I respectfully disagree. But for what he's done here, for the amount of time he's been here, yeah, his resume speaks for itself for, like, why I think the Chiefs are using him and the clout that they put him in for a trade piece. But, like, Kansas City Chiefs, man, I mean, like, whew, there's a lot of fat, thick resumes on this roster currently that have done a lot more. But, again, I don't have an issue with trading Trent McDuffie because whether you agree or disagree with how Brett Veach has drafted this team, there's one thing that he hits, and that's cornerbacks. And I trust in that, and that gives me a little bit of more. That's why, for me personally, I am heavily in favor of going and getting free agent offensive pieces because we have struggled finding those in the draft and developing them to be what they can be in the pros. We've seen that with Xavier Worthy, Rashee Rice. I mean, we miss the character concerns on that one, and we don't know what that's going to be. But again, you look at what you could have in free agency and what you could put around Patrick Mahomes, and then you use where you're really strong in your mind, and that is like drafting the secondary with Brett Veach and like knowing what him and Spags can really do to develop what can make this defense best. And yeah, I think that this is one of those things where the cornerback position, Trent McDuffie, fan favorite, good dude all around, on and off the field, lots of accolades, good time in Kansas City. But it's like, do you want to give that money to that position where you can find maybe a similar suit in the draft with somebody who has a track record of it? Or do you want to spend that money on something where they don't have a good track record on finding a receiver and a guy that's a proven commodity that, with the addition of Patrick Mahomes in his every Sunday get up, becomes that much better? And I think that's why I don't really have a huge torn feeling about the Trent McDuffie situation.
Are you trading Trent McDuffie, though, with the Jalen Watson situation? I mean, he is a free agent as
Watson,
well.
Yes!
ESPN has him as the 13th best free agent on the market right now. Are you prepared to lose both of your cornerbacks?
I think you probably have to choose one. I don't think you have enough resources to go get a full cornerback room with everything else you need to do. You don't have enough draft picks. You don't have enough money to just go get, okay, we're going to go get this corner. And after keeping Christian Fulton, and you believe in the last three or four games that he played and the flashes that he showed, and you believe in that, and you're saying, okay, Noah Williams, Christian Fulton, I'm going to draft somebody else, and there's probably somebody we're forgetting on the roster already. That's a solid depth piece.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe. But I think probably you got to look with Watson.
Oh, and by the way, you're going to get rid of Brian Cook most likely,
exactly,
too. So,
exactly.
Like, that's why I'm asking, like, is the Trent McDuffie trade a guarantee? Is it something we need to do, or is it something we just want to do? Because now, it doesn't mean just because Jalen Watson is a free agent doesn't mean he's not going to re-sign here or anything of that matter. We don't know how that one's going to play out. Brian Cook the same way. But let's think about it this way. You could conceivably be looking to replace three-fourths of your starting defensive backfield from a year ago, right? And if you're willing to do that, fine. That's fine. If you're willing to do that, you've got some guys on the roster that you're that you're looking at that you think can take that next step up. Because quite honestly, every defensive back that's left, we really haven't missed that guy, right? We have not missed Legarius Sneed. We did not miss the guy who went to San Francisco a couple of years ago, Charvarius Ward. We don't miss these guys when they leave. Now, I mean, Trent McDuffie's different. He's an all-pro, you know, one of the best in the league right now at that position. But those are the things you're going to have to decide. That's why being a general manager is tough because, Trent McDuffie trade sounds great. Oh, Jalen Watson is ranked as the 13th best free agent
Watson
on the market.
Yes!
And then you continue to look at this free agent list for ESPN. Brian Cook is ranked as the 22nd best free agent available by ESPN. And so you're looking at basically three top 22 players, you know, that are available right now off your roster. That's a big number of top players. So those are the things you got to think of. And I don't know what the right answer is on this because in a vacuum, individually, they all make sense. But when you start to combine it all together, damn, losing three-fourths of the secondary is a big deal for a team.
Respect the text real quick, 660. Fulton and Noah starters. Josh Williams bring him back. Draft somebody. Secondary set. Can't trade McDuffie and then overpay Watson. I do like that.
I do like that. That's a good point.
It's a very good point.
You don't panic.
Respect the text.
Very much respect that text.
Yeah. And again, it doesn't matter who you have playing defensive back. If your defensive line can't get any pressure on the quarterback, those guys are going to get roasted all day.
Matt.
One word.
First name is Blake, and he goes on a cruise. He goes on a Caribbean cruise.
Katie Holmes.
No. Ah!
Are you listening?
What's your least favorite thing about working with yourself?
Body odor.
You get one word.
On the count of three, name your favorite dinosaur. One, two, three.
Velociraptor.
This is One Word on Fesco and Dusty.
One, two, three.
Oatmeal raisin.
P.S. Big Oxley agrees with you. Commanders is a dumb name. It's a terrible name. I don't know one person that likes that name.
No, that's so true.
Seriously.
And he's a fan.
Right. That's what I'm talking just their fans. Their fans hate the name.
Yeah, I haven't met one person who's like, Commanders, come on, this is great.
Doesn't that bang? That bang? No.
No, but that actually sucks.
No, it doesn't. It needs Blue Chew.
You know what bangs? Coach Sorensen, one word. How about our guy, Danny Sorensen, assistant safeties coach over there at BYU? One word.
Cool. I like seeing guys, you know, get those kind of jobs and, you know, continue on with their career, give them something fun to do. And he goes back to his alma mater. That's cool, man. If I'm a player, I'd love to have a former NFL guy coaching me in college.
Foreshadowing. It'll be 2 years, and he'll be on Spags' roster.
No, here's what's going to happen. Here's what's really going to happen. Spags retires. Dave Merritt's the DC. Danny Sorensen is your defensive backs coach.
There we
just
go.
Like Merritt is.
He's the perfect player coach. He's the guy that you want that's a player that becomes a coach.
You boys
want
to know how I got these rings?
100%.
Yeah, he's the guy that was good but not a superstar that can tell you how to be. Yeah, absolutely. Like, he gets a bad rap here in Kansas City, but
idiotic to me.
He was a really good football player.
He was a good player.
Yeah.
This is another good player who's gotten a bad rap these last few years, Russell Wilson. He talked back to Sean Payton on Twitter. This is Taylor Lewan reading that tweet from a couple months ago, and then Russell Wilson discussing it on Bussin' with the Boys.
What tweet?
Oh, yeah, I'll read the tweet. This is the tweet that you put out. Classless, .. but not surprised. Didn't realize you're still bounty hunting 15 plus years later through the media.
I don't say much. I never hardly ever say anything. I think there's a time and place. But sometimes you get fatigued of people talking about you. You just say, like you mentioned, you're all human. You know, but it's one thing for people that maybe aren't in the field or aren't, people say bots or whatever, talking. Yeah. Like, I don't worry about that stuff. Like, that never. But to me, when you've been in the ring or you've been on the same side of this and that, and I got the same amount of rings as you got, meaning Sean, listen, I got a lot of respect for him as a play caller, this and that. But to take a shot, I don't like. I don't think it's necessary, especially when I'm not even on your own team anymore. So for me, I've realized I've stayed quiet for so long. There's a time and place where I'm not. For me, I know who I am as a competitor, as a warrior, as a champion too. I've beaten Sean too. You know, like we've been on the same place and same thing. And so it's not a matter of disrespect. Just don't disrespect me.
Respect is the one word that I will use on that. My respect grew for Russell Wilson in that scenario. Right. How could you not agree with everything that guy said right there? He goes, enough's enough, man. It's one thing to, you know, hear from us, but when a guy that's like, we're all in this together at the end of the day in the NFL, and for somebody like that to take shots at Russell Wilson, I am glad he fired back at Sean Payton, because I think Sean Payton is America's douche.
I agree.
Got a couple other candidates for that one as well, but Sean Payton on that whole thing, one word, time. You know Sean Payton ain't going to stay quiet.
Impressive how he was able to be so bad at PR and so bad publicly that he has now switched the narrative. We are Russell Wilson fans. Sean Payton,
very impressive. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a Sean Payton fan, quite honestly. Yeah. I mean, the guy put bounties on injuring human beings. There's no way to cover that up.
Did you know that he wanted Patrick Mahomes and ended up getting Marshawn Lattimore?
Yeah, I heard that somewhere, yeah.
Tony G played basketball. Okay, yeah. Pat McAfee talking Caleb Downs, putting to bed some of those rumors on the injuries.
We reach out to the Downs family. The Downs family immediately sent us to a suit, sent a thumbs up, never going to do that. So then we go to a couple NFL teams, and we try to get a little follow-up on what we have heard. Multiple NFL teams have told us there is nothing in the medical that would deter us from bringing Caleb Downs in.
One word, Caleb Downs, safe to pick.
He is safe to pick. My one word is about the people who are putting the false rumors out there, scum.
Richards.
Scum. Because that's wrong, man. You're jeopardizing a college kid, basically, to have an opportunity at the best possible employment because you're being a selfish ass.
Maybe the word would be libel. Because if I'm his team, I'm like, hey, man, who put that out? We'll find out who you are. And we'll sue you.
Yeah, I mean, that seriously, somebody needs to start doing that, like suing these teams that are just out there blatantly lying, because this happens all the time.
Well, it's like when they put the Laremy Tunsil gas mask photo on, like, the night of the draft. They're like, oh, that's going to cause him to fall. 13th overall pick to the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Or not the Dolphins. Was it Dolphins?
Yeah, it was the Dolphins. Last night, NBC brought back the classic broadcast with Bob Costas and Glanville, and it was fantastic, super fun. This was Bob Costas on maybe a little slip up.
Glanville?
What did I say? Did I say Glanville? Collins?
Collins.
Doug Collins.
Doug Collins, Doug Glanville.
You thinking of Jerry Glanville?
Yeah. All right, let's get to Bob Costas.
Kelly graduated that weekend.
Was kind enough to let me see Kelly graduate.
I worked that one with you guys too.
What did I say?
I think you said Enberg.
Oh, yeah. Two great dicks.
Yes. Someone's going to cut that off, and it's not going to sound right. It's not going to sound right. Two great Richards, known by as Dick, with the last name beginning with an E. Two D-E's.
Yes. Thank you, Dick Ebersole.
Yes. And thank you, whoever edits that out. Box for three. Trying to change the subject.
In this day of social media, good luck, those guys.
Oh, I'm toast.
Love. Because Bob gets it. That's the guy who just gets it. I wish more play-by-play guys had that kind of personality right there.
That's awesome.
That was fantastic. I watched a little bit of that game, I think the first quarter of that last night. It was cool. It was really cool
Very
to see.
Fun.
Like, I forgot how much I really like Mike Fratello. The czar of the telestrator, baby. I forgot how much I liked Tim Costas. Obviously, that moment right there is. That's one of the top five broadcasting moments of all time.
Two great dicks.
Play the whole thing again, man. That guy is awesome.
Kelly graduated that weekend.
Kind enough to let me see Kelly graduate.
And I worked that one with you guys too.
What did I say?
I think you said Enberg.
Oh, yeah.
Two great dicks.
Yes.
Someone's going to cut that off, and it's not going to sound right. It's not going to sound right. Two great Richards, known by as Dick, with the last name beginning with an E. Two D-E's.
Yes. Thank you, Dick Ebersole.
Yes. And thank you, whoever edits that out. Box for three. Trying to change the subject.
In this day of social media, good luck, Coach Guy.
Oh, I'm toast.
And I'm that guy, I guess.
Two great dicks.
Yep. Classic nostalgia, the way they open it up with the whole NBC. They even used the microphones from back in the 90s with the
everything. Yeah,
it was great.
The whole thing. You thought you were in 1995 watching that game. Felt good, yeah.
They're going to find out there in 2026 when they see the social media world take those audio clips.
Yeah. Be doing it for the clicks.
One word, last one here. AJ DeBans, a potential number one overall pick in the NBA draft, says, well, actually, maybe not. I might not leave college. One word.
Unique. It is unique. He said his mom wants him to get his degree, and if he's making, what, $5 million, $6 million a year for 4 years, you can make $20 million, get your college degree, and never have to play in the NBA or work again in your life. I mean, I wonder if we're going to see guys do that, because it is unique for me.
Yeah, Smoke. He's going to the league. He'll be a top two pick, and he'll make way more than he'll make in college in that position of getting picked. So it's a fun story. It's a good idea. But BYU also just landed a top recruit as well, coming in next year.
They're running out of money now, huh?
No, the Crumble Cookies are still paying a lot of money at BYU. Coming up next, we had a conversation earlier about this guy starting the thing off for you. We'll talk more about it here next on 96.5 The Fan, your home for the Kansas City Royals.
You're listening to Bob Fesco.
Out of anybody should talk, he should never grab a microphone.
And Dusty Likens.
His ass is foul of all foul.
Weekdays 6 to 10. Fesco and Dusty is brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. 96.5 The Fan.
Wrapping up the 7 o'clock hour here on 96.5 The Fan. Some news out of New York. A mom delivered a massive 13-pound baby boy. The new baby boy is so large, he's already requires clothes made for a six-month-old baby.
Oh, my God. 13 pounds. I hope she had a C-section on that one.
Whew. It's a massive child. Chiefs need a running back. One thing I don't think that the Royals need is an answer to who should be your leadoff hitter? Because it is a popular question that you get as, you know, spring training kind of winds down. The World Baseball Classic for the Team USA will start on Friday at 7 o'clock local time on Fox as they team up against Brazil in their first game of the World Baseball Classic. But one thing we saw yesterday was an exhibition game against the Giants. And Team USA was the visiting team. They hit first. Bobby Witt Jr. stepped in the box. He saw two pitches, got a single. Bryce Harper got a double immediately afterwards, and then Aaron Judge, the captain, knocked them both in, 2-0 lead. That was enough for me. I understand that Bobby Witt Jr. early in his career was a leadoff hitter, and we had Vern on Monday, as we do every single Monday at 8:20, and we talked about it, like, he's going to hit leadoff for Team USA. If he's productive, is this something where Contreras like, hey, this is the way, right? And Vern had told us early in Bobby Witt Jr.'s career when he was much younger, I say much younger facetiously, younger, that it was something that kind of got to him. Like, he'd go home thinking about, you know, why didn't I swing at the first pitch? Should I swing at the first pitch? And maybe at that time it wasn't his position to be the leadoff hitter for this team. Now, he's older, he's more experienced. He's continued to be an insane weapon in the lineup. And people will say, oh, he had a down year last year. Led the entire Major League Baseball organization in hits and led the entire Major League in doubles with 47. And Bobby Witt Jr. is such a word that Mac loves to use, a Swiss Army knife when it comes to your lineup. Could he hit third? Absolutely. Could he hit second? For sure. Can he hit leadoff? He should. Because of how he can get on base. And 35% of the time, he's going to get on base. And you know, you can judge him for getting caught stealing, but look at the percentage in his career. I trust that maybe last year was an off year base running for the entire team because they were worried about getting runs. And to me, there's nothing more suitable for this Royals team than to put your superstar in the leadoff spot for three main reasons. Number one, every team that faces the Royals has to deal with Bobby Witt Jr. out of the chute. Whether it's your ace, whether it's whatever, you're dealing with Bobby Witt Jr. to start. Then, if he gets on base, the possibility of, can he stretch one into two? Can he get a stolen base in second? And then you have Michael Garcia hitting right behind him. And number two reasons why he should lead off is he gives you everything you want, right? He can hit a home run. He can hit a double. He can hit a triple. He can get a single. He can bunt the ball to start the game off. and kind of gives you every sort of option that you have. Whereas, like, if you have like Luis Arraez, you're going, this guy's going to get a single and that's the ceiling. Like, that guy's going to get a base hit. He's going to be on first, decent speed, but at least we'll have a guy on. With Bobby Witt Jr., you have a guy on and a potential guy that can score. And the third reason I will give this to you is that you have a pitching staff that you can anchor on in this division. And if it is going to be the best pitching staff in this division, why not more often than not give them a 1-0 lead? Or if they do go out there and give up one, you're like, all right, if I give up one, at least I got Bob leading off. And not only that, how many times do we see it before where maybe your 9 guy gets on and then Bobby Witt Jr. comes in right behind Kyle Isbell? Because then guess who's going to see more pitches in the 9 spot? Kyle Isbell, because they're not going to have Bobby Witt Jr. coming up in the next in that inning with a chance to knock him in. So there's so many reasons why, to me, it's obvious that Bobby Witt Jr. should do it. And I think that if he begins to like this role for the U.S. Baseball team in the World Baseball Classic, then maybe that does carry over and Q goes, all right, that's it. I'm not thinking about it. Leading off, playing short, number 7, plug it in, let it go. We'll figure out 2 through 9.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you, and I'm to the point now where I think the Royals are committing baseball malpractice if Bobby Witt Jr. is not in the leadoff spot. Here's another number for you. Based on the data from recent seasons, Bobby Witt Jr. scores roughly 45% of the time he reaches base. Almost half the time that he's getting on base, he scores. 43.6% for his career. He scored 403 runs and has been on base 924 times. And that's a 43.6% conversion rate from when Bobby Witt Jr. gets on base to when Bobby Witt Jr. scores. You guys are gamblers. That's hella odds, right? Those are hella odds right now for Bobby Witt Jr. And that's why I say it is baseball malpractice if he's not in the leadoff spot, because he is your best player. And what you want to do in baseball, and this is generational, this is not analytics versus the eye test or anything like that. This isn't old versus new. For generations, baseball has said, all right, how do we get our best players to have more at-bats? Well, you move them up in the lineup. That's why everybody has a bottom third in their order in Major League Baseball that stinks out loud, right? All the good players are batting at the top of the lineup, and you want your best player at the top of the lineup, and that is Bobby Witt Jr. He gets on base 35% of the time. He scores 45% of the time that he gets on base, and a team can easily have a 1-0 lead before the opposition even settles in. Because even if Bobby just singles, you know he's stealing. You know he's going to third. He's running at a rate that they said on ESPN yesterday at 30 feet per second. So he's motoring around the bases and down the baselines. There is no reason anybody can give me for not having Bobby Witt lead off. Because now you have a legit number 2 guy in Mikel Garcia. That guy's got a stick. And then you've got Vinny Pasquantino. Then you've got Salvador Perez. Those are the first 4 guys in your lineup. With Bobby Witt leading off, you should always have a run in the first inning, or a good portion of the time have at least 1 run in the first inning. If Bobby's batting second, leadoff guy gets out, now you've already got 1 out. Bobby's got nobody to drive in. You want to let your best player set the tone for the game. I just can't see any reason why Bobby Witt Jr. should not be in that leadoff spot for the Kansas City Royals. It makes just way too much sense, and I hope this isn't something that gets overthought by the nerds in the front office that are going to say, well, actually, no. Use the eye test in this one. Use the common sense in this one. Guy's arguably the best player in baseball, gets on base at an alarming rate, and then scores at an even more alarming rate when he gets on the bases.
Not only that, I don't know if you hit it on that, because there was a lot of good stats there. If you lead off in a game, you're probably going to hit more often.
Oh, yeah, you do. Absolutely. You know, there's an opportunity for you to get at least 1 more at-bat per game.
And maybe this is a good problem to have, is that you're in a position where you're like, well, is it Bobby? Is it Mikel? And I think that when you look at this, I feel like if I can kind of get it to the point of where I think the text line and where fans would be at, to where I could persuade you to say why Bobby Witt Jr. should lead off. Number 1 stat, he's going to average more at bats per game. Mikel's a great player on this Kansas City Royals team, but I'm sorry. I want Bobby Witt Jr. with more at bats than Mikel Garcia. Mm-hmm. That is not a shot. That is not a disgrace take towards Mikel Garcia. But when I have the 3rd best baseball player in baseball, only behind Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge, I want that guy to hit as much as possible. And you could be like, well, at, you know, the stats between leadoff and second, then you're getting into semantics, but leading off is an insurance that he is going to hit more often than not. The number two reason why I would do that is because you know who else hits leadoff? Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei Ohtani hits leadoff, guys. I mean, that's a power hitter.
And again, you could be like, and I know the argument is going to come or the debate is going to come where it's going to say, well, look at his lineup. Shohei Ohtani could hit anywhere in that lineup. You're right. And he hits leadoff.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could have Mookie Betts leadoff. Then you could have, you know, Freddie Freeman hit second and be like, oh, now we have Shohei Ohtani coming up third. Or, you know what you could do is the opposing pitcher, just like I've described with Bobby Witt Jr., steps up on the slab and goes, oh, shoot.
Yeah.
All right, we're starting off with Ohtani. This sucks. Same thing can happen for Bobby Witt Jr. because Bobby Witt Jr., yeah, the third best player in the game, A, gets more at bats, and B, I hate to tell you this, I'd rather have Bobby Witt Jr. getting more at bats than Michael Garcia.
Let me ask you this. This is why Gemini's awesome, guys. I typed in for Bobby Witt Jr. I said, the first question that I asked was, what percentage of time does Bobby Witt score when he gets on base? They answered that. Then I said, how many more at bats do you get in a season leading off versus batting second? And the answer is this. It's about 20 more at bats over the course of a season. And then it does this. It says, does this apply to Bobby Witt Jr.? Bobby Witt Jr. typically bats second for the Royals. If the Royals moved him to the leadoff spot full-time, he would likely see those extra 18 plate appearances. Given his 45% scoring rate, as we discussed, those 18 extra plate appearances would statistically translate into about 3 extra runs scored over the course of the season just by putting him in that leadoff spot. If I could tell you you would score 3 more runs just by moving Bobby Witt to number one, you're going to go ahead and do that. That's a big number. Over the course of 162 games, you know, you score an extra run here. Maybe that accounts to 3 more wins for you on the season. Where would the Royals have been with 3 more wins on the season? Probably in the postseason last year. So this is a situation that just makes too much sense. Even the mathematical stuff that all the geeks and dorks are looking at makes a lot of sense to put Bobby Witt in that leadoff spot. The eye test makes sense to put Bobby Witt in that leadoff spot. I'll take a 3 extra runs, 18 more plate appearances per year for my best player. Hell yeah, let's do that.
And I want to give more insight to the Twitter or the text line that keeps coming up with the same thing. But does Bobby Witt Jr. want to hit first? I think it was the thing last year where he wasn't a fan of hitting. Again, I go back to when Vern was on the show on Monday for the 5th frickin' time this morning. And I know not everybody listens at the same time, so I digress. Bobby Witt Jr. 2 years ago said he wasn't a fan of it because he would go home thinking about what he should have done and what he could have done. Again, times change. People get older and better and wiser at their craft. He's also doing it for Team USA, and maybe during this little short stint, he has figured something out to where he has now developed that role.
Right.
So give it time and trust the third best player in baseball, only behind Judge and Ohtani. And when you say, well, Aaron Judge hits second, okay, that's fine. Aaron Judge's speed is no longer what it was. Aaron Judge is a raw power hitter, whereas Ohtani and Bobby Witt can get on base and make havoc for the rest of the team in stealing bases. Ohtani just, what, a year ago or 2 years ago, 50-50.
Yeah,
and that was home runs, yeah, and stolen bases. So the speed is there. So it's not the same conversation
and
with Judge.
And one other thing, and I'm sorry to jump on this. I know we got to run, but how many do you see on the first pitch of a game? It's just to get me over strike two by the pitcher. I mean, Bobby Witt stands there, laces that thing to right field or left field, and he's got a double.
And the other thing, too, as we wrap this up, is how many times do the Royals play a pitcher that you've never heard of that's a minor league goat that comes up here with a 0-0 ERA, and for some reason they have trouble with it? If Bobby Witt Jr. is the first batter he sees and he takes him bridge, that dude will be shook the rest of the game. Yeah. You don't have that story. So, again, your best player on your team needs as many at-bats as possible because it will be a successful recipe for your team moving forward. We revisit our poll question, plus Bill versus Bill might be a possibility in college March Madness tournament here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan. Fesco and Dusty is brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues.